as with any military adventure, campaign, military attack, in the case of the bioweapon injections, it's an overt global attack. There are built in a number of different layers and levels of tactics and mechanisms by which the average person who's watching bombs go off would never think about. But in the case of the bioweapon injections, they, the elite and whoever they're working with, plan this out so carefully and meticulously that, as we know now, in the Pfizer documents, there are 1,291 different injuries and compromised issues of health that were discovered by Pfizer in its virtually non-existent trials. 1,291. Think about it. And that's just the admitted part. It's what we've been saying for 2.5+ years. This thing has so many tentacles. It's more than a Medusa. It's crazy. So they knew they could never get everybody to take the shots. They knew that. And they probably came up with a pretty good estimate. And it's estimated now that anywhere between 80 and 90% of Americans, I'm not talking about you folks overseas, I don't know what your rate is, but it's in many cases close, Americans have taken these injections. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and even 6. Maybe even more. So what does that mean? The controllers are presented with a dilemma. This is going back many years, maybe decades. What about the 20% or thereabout 10% that will not take the shots? Well, they built into the whole damned attack mechanism the idea that they could get the unvaxxed and the unwilling and the vax refusers by shedding. People shed things all the time. The common cold, that's another coronavirus. Many, many things are contagious through body contact, through exhalations, through skin touching, through all body fluids. That's why we've been saying for some time now that sex kills. Easy, no problem. I'll wager there's a lot of people who have had sex with a vaxxed or their vaxxed opposite, and they've come down with life-threatening, and ultimately they have died from that encounter or those encounters. I have no doubt. That's just me. I'm not speaking for anybody else. Okay. So we have the issue of shedding. Most people don't want to hear about it. They just don't believe it. They can't see it. They can't hear it. They really can't touch it. So it's probably not real. Oh, it's more real than we've even been able to say. And there was a big event just the other day that focused on shedding. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. This is a very bad issue because one breath on you can transmit mRNA, the spike protein, the most deadly protein probably ever in existence, even though it is synthetic, it's still number one. And now we think that the liquid nanoparticles may be being shedded upon the unwary as well. That's the new issue. Are these LNPs, these little fatty deposits that are covering the mRNA instructions when they go into the cell, are they also being shed? Apparently they are. So, Erica, set this up about the FLCCC event and where we are on this. And it did take them a long time to make this a formal topic, but they did, and that's to their credit. So tell us more about this. This just happened a couple days ago.
Yeah, and we did mention it on Wednesday. It took place on Wednesday evening. It was part of their weekly series, weekly webinar, and it was devoted to the topic of shedding, which has been a hot topic ever since these things rolled out and people began experiencing, in some cases, horrific symptoms after being around people who had received the injections. And so Pierre Corey did a fair amount of research to try to present what we can say for sure, what's known, what's been happening clinically, and it is rather disturbing. He did present quite a bit of evidence to point to the fact that they knew these things shed and needed to be studied before they would be released on a large scale, as they have been. There's
like 6.5 billion.
Worth. Yeah, there's documentation going back to 2015, I believe, where, you know, because these things were up and coming and being toyed with in the laboratory, it was a concern. Because if they are shedding, then that means that other people, other mammals in the environment are going to be contaminated with this stuff with unknown consequences. But apparently, it either was completely disregarded or expected in the case of this bioweapon, and now we're all suffering for it. The disturbing thing is that the unvaxxed are suffering many of the same consequences of the injection that the vaxxed are. In some cases, you wouldn't even be able to distinguish it. The side effects and health issues that these people are having are just as severe and intractable. And I think our special guest we had on last week, Lori, was a prime example of that. And you don't necessarily have to touch the person
Correct.
To receive what
No.
they're calling the intervention.
The gift that keeps on giving.
So, and apart from this, Stephanie Seneff had presented some information back in August at a roundtable pertaining to the shedding of the lipid nanoparticles. And she referenced a paper that was published in 2019 by a Marco Maugeri, who's actually in Sweden working for AstraZeneca, I believe. This particular individual has done quite a bit of research on lipid nanoparticles and mRNA, and it's known that because the mRNA is complexed with these cationic lipids, that they are repackaged inside the cell and then exported as exosomes. And they can enter into the environment and be picked up by other humans, animals, intact. And
yeah,
in some cases,
we think all mammals may be open to this.
Yeah, from what I can discern from this research, it looks like when the lipid nanoparticle with the mRNA is repackaged in the injected person's body, it's in a form that's probably more biocompatible, because now it has a human or mammalian coating on it. They call it an extracellular vesicle, EV, also known as an exosome. So it's now packaged in something that the body would recognize. It's no longer quite as synthetic as something that's coming through a needle.
Right.
With, you know, polyethylene glycol and these other components. So that may be why it seems to be even more potent after it's been passaged through a human.
Interesting.
In terms of its toxicity.
I wonder how that could happen. That's an interesting comment. What would passing it through us do for potency? Make it
humanize
worse?
It in a sense?
How about inhumanize it?
Well, it's somehow tagging it biochemically
it. Yeah.
So that it can be read or processed by another living organism.
It's all so damn diabolical. It's unreal.
Yeah, it is, and so it is rather frightening. And the other thing they said, and you'll hear it in their own words, is that about 20% of the patients that they are seeing in their clinical practice now are unvaxxed, and they test everybody now routinely for these amyloid clots. It's a special type of test. It requires a staining and a rather expensive microscope to be able
right.
to detect these things. And as I understand it, there's only three places in this country that are equipped to do that right now. But he said that every single unvaxxed person who has been seen in their clinic has had these amyloid clots. Now, if they're asymptomatic, they're not that bad. They grade them on a level of 1 to 4. 4 being the most severe. If they're symptomatic, they register up around 3 to 4. And then that's bad. That's typical of a person who's received the injection.
Right. This is not good.
No.
So just to kind of roll this up, then we're going to play a couple clips for you. If you have not taken shedding seriously, and I assume most of you listening have, but the majority of people have not. They don't believe in masks. They got tricked with that whole mask thing. It's not an issue of constitutional rights, whether you wear a mask or not. It's an issue of protecting yourself. And they didn't talk about shedding in the beginning at all. We did. We were certainly among the very first who talked about it and constantly urged people to protect themselves. No, we don't want you to wear a mask for 8 hours at work all day. But if you're around people who are vaxxed, you either better rethink your employment or you better consider wearing a mask and taking lots of breaks to go outside and take the mask off. Breathe air outside that's supposed to be better for you. But this is not a joke. Take that advantage, whatever it is, and use it to your advantage. You have to. You've got no choice. Shedding is real. It's not some fairy tale. People still think it is. It's not.
No, the people who have received the injection are literal biohazards.
They're walking bioweapon distribution units. That's what they are. They're weapons. They've been weaponized to spew this stuff to the unvaxxed. Think about it.
You
have been weaponized. If you're vaxxed, you have been weaponized.
People are constantly asking, how can they look healthy and be making everybody else so sick? Well, don't forget, they've had part of their immune system disabled. The part that would normally be attempting to fight this stuff off to, you know, with the fever, aches, pains,
yeah.
chills, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not working. It's suppressed. And so they're able to tolerate this protein. They are generating antibodies in most cases, so they're neutralizing some of what's being produced. But by the same token, they are that protein, whatever isn't being neutralized, is for sure wreaking havoc in their body. It takes a long time for a chronic degenerative disease to actually manifest in symptoms in some cases. And cardiovascular disease, for example, can take years, decades, before the extent of the damage is noticeable. But a lot of times it starts when a person's in their 20s. Same with diabetes. You can be walking around with sky-high blood sugars and not know it for a while. Same with high blood pressure. So I wouldn't assume that because they look healthy and they're getting around okay, that they are healthy.
No. And I see them every day, and they're walking and talking, but I can tell you there's no laughter out anymore to speak of. There is a lot of coughing. These people are fighting.
Oh, there sure is.
They're fighting 1,291 admitted adverse reactions and damages from this bioweapon injection. That's from Pfizer's own data. Okay? And many of those can be spread through shedding. Many of those symptoms, those syndromes, those injuries, you name it. And it's covered. It's in there. All right. First clip, the FLCCC weekly update, which occurred on Wednesday, is, I've got it queued here. You want to set it up at all? It's just short.
Well, piece. Yeah, the first part was Pierre Curie just describing the amount of evidence that there was to indicate that they knew about shedding and yet kind of danced around it. And then the second half, we have his partner, Scott Marsland, a nurse practitioner, who is going to describe what they're seeing in their practice. And I think that's most enlightening because it's real life.
All right, very good. Okay, here's the first The first clip, this is Dr. Pierre Corey and the FLCCC Shedding is Real program.
Where we weren't vaccinating kids, right? Because this is before we got those heralded FDA approvals that we could jab kids as young as 6 months old. Before that time, we were vaccinating aggressively in adults, and they saw a correlation between ramped up vaccination amongst adults and excess mortality in unvaccinated children. I don't know of another possibility to explain that relationship, unless it's spurious, coincidental, but they saw it over and over. Out of all these correlation coefficient values that they corrected, 32 were positive. And so how come you keep having a correlation with increasing vaccination and then deaths in unvaccinated children? And they even had a timing for it. They saw when the correlations disappeared, and for some reason occurred during the first 18 weeks. So again, this question for how long should we worry? I mean, the data is all over the place. I don't think we really know. But there was a correlation with mortality. And they also found from a different data set, an unexpected increase in mortality in children correlating with adult vaccination rates in the previous period. So I'm going to stop there. I hope I've said enough. But I kind of just reviewed what's known about this technology, these gene therapies, that they're delivered in nanoparticles. Nanoparticles distribute widely in the body. They can be excreted, exhaled, and then they can be absorbed by those in the environment that are exposed to them.
Okay, got it? Very good. What's that second cue? I cannot find the email stamp.
I think 3215. 3515.
That's it. Okay. Now, what he just said is something that we've been saying for close to 3 years now, and it's really nice to see it finally getting some mention. But, I mean, seriously, it's a little late.
I know.
Barn doors wide open, flapping in the breeze. The horses have all fled, and transmission is happening all the time amongst the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. It's just late, and I wish we'd have known in the beginning, but there was so much chaos and confusion sown by the matrix of control. That's what they wanted, and that's what they got. So there's denial, there's confusion. More and more people are beginning to hone in on this, but they're not willing or able to take the steps to really begin to self-isolate. And self-isolation, i.e. staying away from the vaxxed, if you're unvaxxed, is absolutely essential. It's essential. And many of you are working with the vaxxed. You can't do that. We understand. That's why we're suggesting masks as much as is reasonably prudent without causing any oxygen or bacterial issues in your body. But masks will help. So will an ozonator on your desk. So with a little ion generator around your neck, all right? Those are also helpful tools. We've had reports of some people really laboring under a lot of symptoms, and they get an ion generator, and the symptoms apparently resolve. The symptoms, I'm not saying the causes, but the symptoms apparently resolve. Is that not true?
Yeah, well, when you think about it, these things were designed before all this shedding stuff happened, for people with allergies. Now, you know, an allergen is usually some kind of protein that's floating around in the environment and getting into somebody's airspace and making them miserable. Well, the spike is also a protein that is aerosolized and can come into your airspace and make you not just miserable but sick. And pretty much everybody that has those types of reactions, once they start using an ionizer, they do notice a big difference. Now, it won't annihilate the smells, because that's another component that makes people sick. And sometimes the mask is helpful to block some of the smell.
Sure. Right. Yes. Okay. The next clip we have is ready to go. You want to say anything about that before I run it?
Yeah, well, that's what I was mentioning about Scott Marsland. That's Pierre Corey's partner in his practice, talking about what they're seeing in their patients.
Okay. All right, here we go. This is Scott.
One of the things that is not mentioned in the research that you're doing, but you know from the work that we've done with our patients and our clinical practices, that we test the amyloid fibrin microclotting on a lot of our patients these days. And 100% of the blood samples of patients that we have sent demonstrate amyloid fibrin microclotting. And so I would say about 20% of those patients are unvaccinated. And
okay, there's your 80-20 right there in their research. All right? 80% and 20%.
Well, 80% of their patients are vaxxed.
Yes, 20% are unvaxxed. And yet they're virtually all showing amyloid clot. Okay,
100%.
Reaction in their blood. This is very bad news. And this locks the shedding issue down tight. If 100% of the 20%, in other words, the unvaxxed 20%, are showing amyloid clots in their bodies, I'm kind of speechless. That means everybody, virtually everybody, at least in their sample, who's unvaxxed and who's been hanging around the vaxxed is showing clear and present danger signals. They're showing evidence of amyloid clotting. This is not good at all.
And not necessarily symptomatic, as you'll hear.
No, asymptomatic is call it stealth, whatever you want. This is bad. All right, here we go.
And when you scale amyloid fibrin microclotting, you're looking at levels between 0 and 4. And when you talk to practitioners that don't deal with long haul and don't deal with vaccine injury, one of the first questions they'll ask, and it's an astute question, they'll say, well, what is your control? And I think the answer at this point is damning in the direction of shedding, which is we've lost our controls. Before the pandemic, there may have been people who had amyloid fibrin microclotting. Now, these are not like normal blood clots, right? These are clots that are very, as Dr. Vaughn often says, it's like spaghetti with cheese sauce on it that's been burnt to the bottom of the pan. Like the body has a really hard time getting rid of them, right? These aren't like the blood clots that we had pre-2019. And I have probably at least a dozen unvaccinated patients who've got 4 out of 4 amyloid fibrin microclotting, right? And, you know, what else we study in our practice or what else we test quite a bit, and we at this point I think we have about 2,000 data points on almost 500 patients, is we check spike antibody dilution levels, right?
Yep.
And, you know, this is not... There's not a paper out there that says, yes, these are a really good indirect measure of spike, but in practicality, it's a useful test that we use to help guide clinical treatment. And what you will see is that the spike antibody dilution levels are all over the map. They don't actually correlate to amyloid fibrin microclotting, but you will see those levels change in relation to shedding experiences. And I mean, there are hundreds of times I've had conversations with patients and they had a spike antibody dilution level that might have been like 100, right? And then they go
Scott,
on.
Scott, just for the listeners, that's very, very low. Maybe we should go over a little bit what that range is and what we see in our different like long COVID, long vax, just so they get a sense of what those numbers
are.
Yeah.
Sure. So if you go to your local hospital, they give you a useless result. It's binary. It's positive or negative. I think it's purposely, as you said about something else earlier, it's obfuscating, right? If you get the test done at Quest, the range might be between 0 and 2500. We really try, and I don't have stock in LabCorp, okay? But we really try to send patients to LabCorp because – They do a granular test that gives you a result between 0 and 25,000. And I actually have a group of patients that I affectionately call the 25,000 club, right? It's about 10% of patients. And I've learned over time that patients are really in a hard place if they have a spike antibody dilution level above 25,000. You would not typically see someone who's unvaccinated with a level above 500. So that's about what you would expect, 500, 400, 200, if someone's simply unvaccinated.
You mean someone who's recovered from COVID, gets this dilution level, they're around 500.
Yep.
I've seen maybe a little higher, but you're right. They're quantitatively very different.
Very low, right? So.
Okay, we're talking 25,000 and 500. So that's a massive divergent set of numbers. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you dropped off for a minute. I just wanted to make sure you were back.
Yeah.
Did you know you dropped off?
Yeah, I couldn't hear anything.
Yes, that's a dead giveaway, isn't it?
Usually.
They haven't bothered us for a while. Okay. So explain what he's telling everyone, just to keep it simple, if you can. He's a little
All right,
bit,
well.
I'd like to keep it simpler. He mentioned when you go to a hospital, they give you a useless result.
Yeah, either positive or negative. So what they're looking for is that they're checking people's antibody levels. Now, it's assumed that when you're exposed to the spike, you're going to generate antibodies to neutralize that spike because it's a foreign protein. It doesn't belong in your body. And the higher that number is, it's assumed that the greater your exposure is. And he said that based on shedding exposures, that number will rise or fall if enough time has gone by in between exposures. So it does seem to be a decent surrogate marker to indicate whether or not you're being affected by shedding.
So it's a spike antibody dissolution number.
Dilution, yeah. So the higher dilution. The number, the more spike you've had to neutralize.
Right. How is this test given? Is it a blood test and a read therein?
Yes, it's a blood test. So the two main labs in this country are Quest Diagnostics and LabCorp.
Right.
And he said that Quest will only give you a positive or negative. They won't give you an actual number.
No. So
and LabCorp will give you that qualitative or quantitative readout.
See, most people who really care about this are going would probably like to have that test to see how much they're being exposed to the vaxxed and spiked. This is the only thing I've heard about it.
It's useful. What would be more useful, too, is I wonder if they're testing for the nucleocapsid, because that would indicate you've got the actual virus.
Right. I didn't hear anything about that yet. All right, let's go back and listen. So hopefully that's helpful. The bottom line, there is a test now to show you who are unvaxxed how much spike approximately you've been picking up. I'll keep it real simple like that. Only one lab in the country.
Then what you will see sometimes, and I have many patients like this, they're unvaccinated, and we check their spike antibody dilution level. The highest I've ever seen is actually among someone who works on our team, right? I think it was like 15,000. Actually, the other day, I think I saw one higher than that. But generally, you would not see a level that high in someone who's unvaccinated. But when you do, if you spend 2 minutes getting the history, you'll find out, I was living a relatively secluded life, and then I decided I wanted to get back to things. I went to the airport. I went on a trip. I visited my family. And, were they vaccinated and boosted? Yes. And did you drive around in a car with them? Yes. And I went to church, too, right? And then they get their spike antibody dilution checked again, and guess what? They're like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000.
What he said was, and you heard it, somebody who'd been living in an isolated fashion suddenly puts him or herself around the vaxxed, and the results are unequivocal. They're getting dosed with spike. and potentially mRNA and potentially LNP.
Mm.
These are three bad strikes you don't want in your record.
Yep.
This is not a joke. They who built this monstrous weapon knew what they were doing, and they knew that shedding was going to be able to cull the rest of the herd, or at least expose them to grave and difficult issues, up to 1,291 of them. This really should anger everyone listening. This is horrible.
And the issue is that once the spike gets into the body, it's not that easy to get it out.
No, you don't get rid of it. No. This is awful. All right, here we go.
Without clinical evidence of developing any typical viral syndrome, they don't report respiratory symptoms. They just were around people, and then you'll see a jump in the antibody levels, which suggests that they've been exposed to spike and absorbed spike. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And are contaminated potentially permanently with spike. Okay? And if they're picking up mRNA and LNPs with it, they're triply screwed, potentially, in terms of developing major and possibly catastrophic health issues.
Mm-hmm.
No, and it's interesting, you know, one of the statements that I was at a conference with, one of the panelists said, was somewhat dismissive of shedding, and they made the statement that they have scoured the world's literature and have not come across one clinical report of shedding. And now, if you heard Naomi, there's dozens of anecdotes. We see it in our practice. You can find it on social media. I encapsulated some of them in my post.
Speaking of anecdotes, we are getting and we're watching very carefully for the unvaxxed who are manifesting the same physical disastrous developments that the vaxxed are showing. And we're seeing more and more and more of it all the time. We're getting people who literally report that their friend had unvaxxed and their friend is now dead from a blood clot, heart attack. I mean, the unvaxxed are showing the same profile, the same platform as the vaxxed if they've hung around the vaxxed enough. And we don't know how much enough is. It could be one exposure for all we know. It could be 100 exposures. But
with Lori, it was a 15-minute car ride.
That's all it was. And she's been down for 2+ years. Listen to our last program if you want to hear what an unvaxxed person has been put through simply from a 15-minute car ride with the windows rolled virtually up. All right.
But the point I want to make is, and Paul, maybe you can weigh in, if you were going to try to publish in a journal a case report of what you felt was shedding, you need some serologic or biomarker evidence to support that what they were like before the event. And I mean, you need something to support that a shedding. And we don't really have a test for spike. You know, we have what we think is a fair proxy or somewhat of a proxy. And so we have this spike antibody dilution level because, remember, it's an antibody level. It's not spike, but we think it correlates to the amount of spike. But, Paul, I mean, how...
Well, what else could cause that? A spike is the only answer, of course.
Publish, even if you had someone who, like, went for a hairdresser appointment and came out sick, how do you publish that and say, the hairdresser was vaccinated, it was shedding. There's no journal that can support that. I'm
going to get this. Yeah.
Well, I would submit humbly that countless anecdotal reports of people who either knew someone who was unvaxxed who got sick or the unvaxxed themselves, like our last program, go listen, is certainly extraordinary evidence. Maybe it's not by the book. They haven't published umpteen papers with before and afters, but I don't think we need that. We've been on this same bandwagon since the beginning of this program. And I remember using an example of a hairdresser. You're going to get your hair done, and the hairdresser is right on top of you, breathing right into your face. Anyway.
No, there were so many women. I mean, that's really what brought the most attention to this issue early on that we're developing those just intractable bleeding issues, menstrual bleeding issues, women of all ages, premenopausal, postmenopausal, even
people in
female
their 70s.
Infants.
Yes.
Yeah. And then pregnant women having miscarriages or stillbirths. Paul Merrick said that that study that they did on unvaxxed women having those types of exposures to the vaxxed and having these symptoms, it's about to be published soon. Mm-hmm. So that's, at least we're going in the right direction, some acknowledgement of it. It's real, but, you know, nobody's doing anything about it.
Mm-mm. No. Do we want to go back and listen to any more of this, or is that enough for this go-round?
All right, you could do a few more minutes. It is...
Okay. All right, Paul is about to speak now, I think. He just started. Here we go.
I do know there is a paper that's in press that should be available soon that looked at unvaccinated women who were exposed to women who were recently vaccinated, and they tracked their progress. So I think that's one way of doing it.
Yep.
So the question I have for you and Scott is, assuming shedding is a real thing. So what is the common route by which a vaccinated person sheds to somebody else? Is it the skin, or is it through exhaled exosomes?
I think, you know, of all the routes, because we know these nanoparticles can be tears, urine, sweat, feces, all of that. But these shedding events, you know, the first two that I saw, it was a massage therapist and acupuncture. So there is physical contact. So that could be, you know, sweat or secretions on the skin. But there's too many cases where there's not physical contact, and it has to be inhalational.
So the answer in very, very simple terms is that there are multiple pathways of shedding. You cannot diminish one or dismiss another one. They're all on the table, and they're all dangerous. And if you're out and if you happen to be a professional and you work touching people, God help you. If you work around people and you're close in your proximity and you're breathing in their exhalations and exosomes, God help you. That's all I can say. This stuff is not a joke, and I'd much rather overestimate the danger than underestimate it. We're in real trouble here. It's not not a game. And it was designed to do exactly what you're hearing. That's how diabolically evil this thing is.
Yep.
Surface area of the surface area of the lung is large, and our exhale breath has lots of exosomes in it. I think, given the distance, it has to be respiratory as the primary route. Is that what you think, Scott?
Yeah, I could give several examples, right? Like a patient who, what we figured out was, he would go to the gym and he had a routine of doing mat work. And if you study the nature of aerosolized particles, they tend to be more dispersed in the upper layer. If you have like an 8-foot-high room or a 10-foot-high room, the aerosolized particles are thinner in the upper 6 feet, and the closer you get to the floor, the more concentrated they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we figured out was that he would feel terrible every time he came home from doing the mat work at the gym. I have an example of a person who is an unvaccinated band teacher who was literally standing in front of students who were blowing through their trumpets and trombones and saxophones all day long, and his spike antibody dilution level was like 13,000, and he acted like a badly injured vaccinated patient with neurological symptoms.
That's another stunning example. I hope these images in your mind are clear. This is not to be taken lightly. That's why we wear masks when we're out, and I know many of you do too. We both wear gloves too if we go into a store, lightweight gloves, some barrier to keep us from grabbing the dirtiest thing we're going to encounter out there, and that's the handle on a shopping cart. That's me talking, but you think about it. Sweaty hands all day long, and they don't clean those handles. And you go grab it, you are literally inviting the penetration of your skin with these tiny, tiny little, these are proteins. They're little. They'll go right through the skin. So you go to the grocery store and you you better wear gloves.
Yeah, especially since we had that report of the Asian woman at the Trader Joe's, not the employee, just a supposed customer handling all the butter. Pick it up, put it back.
Yes, somebody was watching the butter section, was probably waiting for his or her turn to go grab some butter. Little packages of butter, you know, 4 cubes in a package, 2 cubes in a package. There was an Asian woman there, and she was standing in front, and she was barehanded picking up every single package and handling it and then putting it back in a new row to build a new display row of the butter. She had handled every one. And God only knows what was on her hands. We don't know. But think about it. That's the kind of dynamite we're playing with here. Simple touch can do it. If somebody wants to get
I can attest to it.
Doorknob. Go ahead.
I definitely got shingles a year ago from, it was either a shopping cart or basket.
Yeah, we figured that out. Yeah, not pleasant either. Not pleasant.
No, you know, I didn't know what it was at first. And I'd seen also in one of the groups at the time, somebody else, so a woman with an identical pattern on her palm and the tips of her fingers.
Oh, really? I don't think you
It was
that.
Identical. I couldn't believe it. So,
remember. I know.
Touch is definitely a means of transmission for this stuff.
So, if you get to the store, you don't have gloves. All stores have those little dispensers of a wipe. Get one of those.
You know, I'm seeing those go away, actually.
Oh, really?
Oddly enough.
Well, anyway, a Kleenex, anything. Put it on the handle or grab the cart on the sides of the handle. In other words, grab the side of the handle mechanism. Don't put your hand on the bar. Just put your hand on the sides. All right. We want to jump into some readers or play more of this. What would you like to do?
Play a couple more minutes.
All right.
I have a patient whose family came to visit her in a warm climate. So they spent a lot of time driving around in a car with the air conditioning on, recirculating. You know, to get maximize the air conditioner, you recirculate the air. Got sick as a dog, and her spike antibody dilution shot up. So those are three different examples. I will often say to patients, you know, if you're going to ride in a car with someone with the windows up, you might as well have sex with them, because you're inhaling their exosomes in a very intense way.
Yeah.
I hope you all heard that. It's very important. You're in a car with anybody who's vaxxed and you're not vaxxed and the windows are up, you're in trouble. You might as well have sex with them. That's quite a statement. All right.
But how common do you think shedding is?
Well, that's an odd question from Paul Merrick. It's as common as there are vaxxed and unvaxxed people together. That's how common it is.
I think it's happening all the time.
Hold on. Let me rephrase the question for you, Paul. I think the science shows that vaccinated. Well, so there's a couple of ways to answer that, right? So we don't know the duration of spike protein production or persistence in the body. We have varying estimates from studies, right? The more recent one is a long time. So we know it does happen, right? I don't know that it happens in perpetuity for every vaccinated patient. I think we need more evidence of that. I think the better question is, how often is the shedding clinically apparent, right? So, you know, I mean, Paul, you and I, we've been traveling, speaking, advocating, testifying. We're around hundreds, if not thousands of people. I have not felt unwell. I've largely feel well all the time. I'm going to answer Scott, and then I want you to go. I think the easiest answer is we don't know how often clinically significant shedding events are occurring in the general population. I think two things need to happen. You need either A, someone recently vaccinated, or B, someone who's making a lot of spike production. And we know that some people make a lot of spike. We know that from autopsy studies. Those who've died from the vaccine have been shown to have died from the vaccine, where they stained for spike. Those poor, unfortunate people had spike disseminated throughout all their organs. So I think some people are more likely to cause symptomatic shedding. And I think some people are more likely to suffer symptomatic shedding. I'm not one of them.
It seems like some patients are more susceptible for whatever reason.
Okay. Well, Pierre Corey says he hangs around lots of people and he's not affected so far. Well, he's certainly not mentioning the simple fact that symptomology can be subclinical. He may not be feeling it, but that doesn't mean there aren't things going on in his body. He didn't mention what his test showed, I don't think, in this. I didn't listen to the whole thing.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
He's saying, I'm not being bothered by it, but where are the test results? Pierre, I'd like to hear those.
A lot of people do say that, and yet you know, some of these people are the ones that die suddenly.
And out of the blue, they're gone. They're gone. They're just heart stops.
You know, we had that example of the chiropractor in Florida who was a gentleman in his 50s, kept himself in good shape, exercised, organic foods, and yet he was working on 30 to 40 mostly vax clients per day, and he had a heart attack and died out of the clear blue.
The problem is myocarditis and heart damage are often unknown to the particular individual. There are no symptoms. There's no way to tell that your heart is being attacked with spike mRNA and your T lymphocytes are all over your heart, just ravaging the heart muscle, trying to kill off all of these horrible spike proteins. And the damage is such that it impedes and interferes with the bioelectric signal to your heart to engage in this very sophisticated pumping activity.
It's you know, the spike can also block ion channels. And that, of course, has implications for nerve cells. I mean, the heart needs electrical conduction to work properly. It could be that. It could be this microclotting. Most people don't have any symptoms when they're microclotting. And yet, it starves all these vital organs of a blood supply, oxygen, nutrients, waste removal.
All right, I hope this we're just about out of time. I hope this is beneficial for all of you, especially those of you who are honestly skeptical about shedding. Those days are over. They've been long over. They've been over as far as we're concerned from the beginning. And again, I go back to the planners and the conceivers of this horrible weapon. They knew that shedding was going to be their ace in the hole. Their final play card. They knew it. And that's how insidious this is.
Yeah, it really is.
So I don't like saying this, but you go in to get your hair done or your hair cut or you're going to visit a chiropractor. It doesn't matter. You're coming into contact with either a vaxxed individual or someone who has been shed upon to the extent that they are, in all likelihood, to some degree, shedding themselves. We know how the game works. And this is a potential extinction-level event given enough time. How much is enough time? 2 years? 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? I don't know. And if they do have an antidote, they'll roll it out when they get to their population reduction that they have planned for. Go ahead.
There's a tendency to think that the shedding peters out over time. Everyone's asking how long. I think in some people, maybe just in general, it never really does peter out. I think there are probably times, depending on
cycles.
Hormonal cycles, stress cycles, where somebody could be producing more spike. Probably their diet, if they have a heavy protein diet, that's probably going to translate into a higher production of spike protein. The kids,
think about that. That's important.
Probably because they're in a growth phase. are very good at synthesizing proteins and churning out a lot of protein. People have gotten very sick from children who have been shot with this stuff.
Americans have traditionally overeaten their necessary daily protein intake. Double, even triple.
Yeah.
You only need 15, 20 grams at the most. If you have a reasonable, healthy profile, you don't need to overdo it. And some of these bodybuilders, they take hundreds of grams a day.
And it's really hard on the kidneys, that much protein. And we have an epidemic, even before the pandemic, of kidney disease, chronic kidney disease.
Right. Well, for the people who are out there doing nothing, taking no precautions, and saying, like Dr. Pierre Corey, I feel fine. Good. More power to you. But that's not what we're hearing monitoring humanity at all. And
yeah, a lot of these people with the microclotting don't, and well, I said, as they don't know what's happening, surprised when they go for a blood draw that the phlebotomist can't really get the blood to come out. And when it does come out, it's very thick.
And that's back again to the issue of the heart. The heart having to push around this dark, thick sludge, not a bright red liquid. A sludge.
Yeah, if it's dark, it's lacking oxygen. I mean, it's not carrying oxygen. It's been oxidized, so it should be bright red when it comes out. If it's dark, yeah, your blood's in trouble.
Okay, well, we're on it, and after 2.5+ years to see the FLCCC finally do something with this, and they did a good job with it, is encouraging. But how many people have been contaminated and lost during this 2.5 years from shedding?
Well, and they knew that the lockdowns would have this boomerang effect where once they let people mix and mingle again, they would do it with great fervor.
You called it. I remember. That was your phrase, mix and mingle. It's what the controllers want. So somewhere, somehow, there are a number of these monsters sitting back and laughing at
no
how
doubt.
This is playing out.
No doubt.
And that's the evil on this planet. Probably off planet, too. All right, there's another three-course meal for you of things to think about. Thank you. Great job. Talk to you soon.
Okay, Jeff. My pleasure. Have a good weekend, everyone.
All right, we will pause and come back with hour three for you. And do listen to this program twice. Share it. And go back to Lori, program or two programs ago, whatever, last program. And this is a perfect example, a classic example of someone who simply got in the car to be a good neighbor and took her vaxxed friends for a 15-minute car ride, and what happened to her. Okay, back in a few.